of the rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته دارم گفته دی اون امامش گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دقل ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدری گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون. این هم همون امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, he replied back to him, اعمل فحمل على رأسك واستغني عن الناس. You can work. You can work so much so that you can be able to hold things on your head so that you become independent from people. So you're not depending on people. فحمل على رأسك واستغني عن الناس فإن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله حمل حجرا على عاتقه فوضعه في حائط له من حيطانه وإن الحجر لفي مكانه فإن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله himself had held a rock on his shoulder, which is of course a metaphor for him doing certain work in the house, for example, or some kind of building work of any sort, and that hajar is still there in its exact same place today, where that same ha'it is, that same wall is. Clearly, when Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, is saying to this person that, you know, you might think that you don't have a skill. You might think that you're not able to do business, but you are able to do labor work, and there's nothing bad when it comes to labor work. But if that's the only means that you are able to, then that should be how it is. And every person is different in the way they are able to gain means for their livelihood, how they are able to gain an income. You cannot expect someone who is more of a mental kind of intellectual thinking kind of person, or theoretic person, to go off and do some, for example, hard labor work. Or you can't expect someone who is used to or accustomed to labor work to do some other kind of office work. And everything else, as long as it's halal income and halal means, as long as a person is doing something for their lives in serving of humanity, in serving of their family members, and most importantly, they have that resilience, they have a determination, they have himma in what it is that they are doing. Because the worst thing for a person to get to is for them to become lazy individuals, for them to hear a hadith says from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, أبغض الخلق إلى الله تعالى. The worst of God's creation is جيفة بالليل بطال بالنهار. A carcass, a human being, someone who in the night time they're like a jifa, they're like a carcass, a dead body, just sleeping. بطال بالنهار. And during the daytime they have absolutely nothing to do. Nothing to do. Imam al-Baqir, again, Imam al-Baqir here, he says, الكسل يضر بالدين والدنيا. That laziness is something that will harm, will affect not only your religion, but also your dunyawi affairs. So a person needs to stay away from being lazy, too much sleeping. You know, we have hadiths that speak about how God hates an-na'um. Al-kasul. Na'um means kathratun nawm, someone who excessively sleeps, too much sleeping, being too lazy. How about waking up early in the morning and being that sahari person, you know, that person who is always al-bakur, as the hadith says, always waking up bakir in the morning. In Farsi they say sahar khizi, an early riser, you know. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi says, al-bakuru mubarak fi jami'in ni'am. A person who wakes up early in the morning will be blessed in all of their blessings, khususan fi rizq, especially when it comes to something like rizq. Another hadith, it says, ala unabbi'ukum ba'da dhalika bima yazidu fi rizq. Shall I inform you of something that will increase in your sustenance and in your rizq? Al-bakuru fi talab al-rizq. Someone who wakes up early in the morning, going out and searching for sustenance, yazidu fi rizq. That itself will increase in their rizq. Waking up early in the morning. You know, one of the important things that we know when it does come to our spiritual sayr wa suluk and spiritual progress and discipline and self-reform is to be a early riser, someone who wakes up early in the morning and starts off their day from that very, very early period of the time. Of course, we all know that when it comes to all of these things, Sheikh Jawadi Amali finishes off this chapter by saying that management is also very important, that you're able to manage and find that balance between all of these things. You manage your own affairs, your major affairs, as he says, you manage them yourself. You don't delegate anybody else to manage your major affairs. As for minor affairs, whether you delegate somebody else or not, that's completely up to you. But for the big issues, it needs to be your responsibility and yours alone. We'll continue on with chapter number 4 in our next episode. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's screams.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Round the World with reporters.
Tehran University has held a ceremony to mark the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's Minister of Science and Technology, who was attending the ceremony, said that universities and academic centers have great capacities to keep the path of Qasem Soleimani alive by studying different aspects of his personality and beliefs.
General Qasem Soleimani was a great person. His personality had different aspects. I believe that academic centers should study his behaviors and personality. I think his lifestyle and beliefs serve as a good role model for all the youth of our country and the world. We have great capacities and potentials at universities and academic centers in this regard.
The event in Tehran came as people and officials attended a ceremony in the city of Kerman, the burial place of General Qasem Soleimani, to remember his lofty status 1 year after his martyrdom.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani had a big impact on the minds of people, both because of his own personality and what happened after his martyrdom. Therefore, for a researcher and expert of social sciences, his martyrdom provides a wide range of topics to study.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and his trench mate Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were assassinated along with their companions in a U.S. terror drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Meanwhile, in response, the IRGC targeted the U.S. airbase of Ain al-Assad in Anbar province in western Iraq to retaliate the U.S. assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Moreover, according to Iranian officials, Tehran has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for assassinating General Soleimani, and soon a court session will be held in Iran in this regard. Iranian officials believe that more than anything, the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has proved to the global public opinion that the U.S. administration is the leading sponsor of terrorism in the world. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
In gratitude for their sacrifices in confronting America, Israel and the Houthis in the region, Yemenis held an event to commemorate the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in the presence of the Iranian ambassador and representatives of the Islamic Resistance Movement.
Today, we live on the martyrdom anniversary of the two leaders, Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Remember the positions of these two heroes to stand by the nation's causes. Haj Qasem Soleimani gave himself to Palestine and the resistance and was intransigent in front of the projects of the Zionist enemy through which it wants to break up the region.
The participants recalled the actions of the martyr Soleimani and how he terrified America and Israel, which thought by assassinating him to weaken the resistance forces, but contrary, it lit a fire that would not be extinguished until the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds and the demise of global arrogance.
We commemorate the two great martyrs, Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Muhandis, who strived for God's cause and are loyal to God and did what they were required to do. God gave them wisdom and strength. They were great people, and we should follow their path.
The martyr Soleimani was an icon in the face of the Zionist entity and its projects. He played a great role in supporting the Palestinian resistance movement and stood by the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces in its battles with Daesh in Iraq.
Once again, Yemenis have taken a resolve to continue the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani in the face of years of aggression against the impoverished nation by Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies and their Western backers. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Crowds of people as well as officials have flocked to Sayyida Zainab Shrine near Damascus to pay tribute to Iranian top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. In an address to the ceremony, Iran's ambassador to Syria said General Soleimani was a symbol assassinated by the U.S. to force Iranians to kneel, stressing that the resistance front will triumph and take revenge of Soleimani's blood.
The Iranian nation will never sit back against those who carried out the crime. Those behind the crime will be punished. Iran will continue supporting Syria and its army until the Syrian army's sovereignty is restored on all territories.
Other speakers underlined the effective role of martyr Soleimani in defeating Daesh terrorists in Syria and Iraq and foiling Western plots across the region. Representative of the Syrian army in the ceremony praised General Soleimani as a brave and wise commander who won the trust of all resistance fighters.
We have gathered here today tribute to martyr Soleimani. His sacrifices will not be forgotten. We will continue adhering to resistance as a sole option. We promise martyr Soleimani that his memory will be our path.
The crime of assassinating General Soleimani amounts to international terrorism in its ugliest form. General Soleimani's assassination is a great loss to Iran, Syria, and the resistance front. But thousands of Soleimanis are yet to come.
Photos of General Soleimani were also showcased in and around Sayyida Zainab Shrine. General Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. in January 2020 in Iraq, led Iranian military advisors in Syria for years across Syrian territories, mainly Aleppo, Damascus, and Deir ez-Zor. His command played a major role in restoring stability to hundreds of square kilometers in Syria.
General Soleimani's significant achievements in Syria cannot be forgotten by the people here. Syrians have marked his first martyrdom anniversary by showing appreciation to his support and acknowledgement that security in so many areas in Syria wouldn't have been possible without his presence. Hamad Ali from Sayyida Zainab Shrine, Damascus Countryside.
People have gathered here in Kabul to pay respect to the bravery and the leading role of two significant figures against invading forces and foreign-backed terrorists, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and our national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud, were close friends and comrades in the region. Their sacrifices have not been fully highlighted yet, so we need to know them more than ever.
Given the fact that Afghanistan has been repeatedly invaded by some superpowers, mainly over the past two centuries, resistance is considered a familiar concept among the nation. Afghans have had some top resistance leaders like Ahmad Shah Massoud, a national hero who became the victim of a terrorist attack back in 2001. His characteristics are very much similar to that of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the eyes of Afghans.
The U.S. expected to remove the name of Qasem Soleimani from the minds of resisting nations by assassinating him. But contrary to those expectations, he became a popular hero, not only for Iranians, but also for all resistance nations across the world, just like Massoud.
Afghans and Iranians share many commonalities in terms of history, culture, religion, and security. Many people here in Afghanistan believe that one of the major similarities between these two nations is their resisting spirit against the invaders. This event in Afghanistan marks the memories of two well-known resistance leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero Ahmad Shah Massoud. This comes as Afghans themselves are suffering from terrorism and are seeking to follow the path of these two heroes. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
A year has passed since millions of Iranians attended the funeral service of slain Iranian military figure General Soleimani. Now, on the first anniversary of his assassination by the U.S., his fellow citizens in Kerman have once again come to his burial place to pay respect to him. Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was killed in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from U.S. President Donald Trump.
We strongly demand that the Islamic Republic take harsh revenge. This is the demand made by all Iranians who owe their security to the efforts of General Soleimani in the fight against the terrorists.
General Soleimani is well known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. He played a key role in dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017 and helped liberate major areas in Syria from the terror group. That's what makes everyone question the U.S.'s drive behind his assassination.
General Soleimani brought the U.S. to its knees in the region. The U.S. sought to trigger chaos in our region by creating Daesh, but General Soleimani helped unite the people of the region and foiled Washington's attempt by defeating Daesh.
Following Soleimani's assassination, massive crowds of people in Iraq took part in his funeral service to pay respect to him. This was followed by million-strong processions in Iran, the last of which was held in his hometown before he was laid to rest. Tehran regards General Soleimani as the architect of U.S.'s defeat in the region. His role in dislodging Daesh terrorists won him huge support and popularity, not only among Iranians, but among the people of Syria and Iraq, who say his assassination created a united front against the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Kerman.
Iran has marked the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's PMU commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes. The ceremony was attended by a small group of people from all walks of life and senior officials due to anti-COVID health protocols. Addressing the ceremony, Iran's judiciary chief Ayatollah Raisi has warned the enemies should await Iran's harsh revenge for the killing of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani. Ayatollah Raisi also said the assassination of anti-terror commander Soleimani will fail to undermine the resistance front.
By assassinating the hero of the fight against terrorism in the region and the world, the creators of Daesh and Al-Qaeda imagine that the resistance front would become weak. But they are wrong. The resistance front will never lose its strength. The assassination of General Soleimani has injected fresh energy into the spirit of resistance among people of the region.
Moreover, head of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Brigadier General Ismail Aani, said Soleimani was the hero of defeating arrogance.
General Soleimani was the man of resistance and logic. His path will continue. Those who assassinated him should be prepared for harsh revenge. General Soleimani was the hero of defeating arrogance. He is the hero of the Iranian nation and a hero of the Islamic Ummah.
A number of foreign dignitaries, including senior officials from Islamic Jihad, Iraq's Hashd al-Shaabi, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, as well as Yemeni ambassador, were among the participants at this event, who talked about different aspects of the personality of General Qasem Soleimani. One of the foreign dignitaries who attended the ceremony was Hashem Safieddin, senior official of Lebanon's Hezbollah, who said the resistance movement should continue the path of Soleimani. He also noted General Soleimani and assassinated Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas protected the world against a Daesh terror group.
Ali Qasem Soleimani was a peaceful man because he became a general. He has been fighting for everyone. He has been fighting for humanity. Such people, we need them. Such people, there are few in this world.
General Qasem Soleimani was a man of resistance. His behavior and his beliefs taught the lesson of life. To all freedom seekers, he is a role model. He was a symbol of the fight against oppression. His name will remain in history forever.
General Soleimani, former commander of the IRGC Quds Force, was killed in a U.S. drone attack in Iraq on January the 3rd, 2020.
On the first martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, senior Iranian officials have once again vowed to bring to justice the main perpetrators of his assassination in due time. According to Iranian officials, a lawsuit which has been filed in Iran against the U.S. for assassinating General Qasem Soleimani is in its final stage, and soon a court session will be held in this regard. Saman Kujiri, Tehran.
After dozens of civilians, including Ghadi's government officials, were killed and injured in the attack on Aden Airport, the deputy head of the Emirati-backed Southern Transitional Council, Hani bin Barak, accused Qatar and Turkey of being behind it, ruling out that Sana'a was involved in it.
It's clear who's behind this latest attack in Aden Airport is the one who benefited the most from this attack, and is United Arab Emirates. United Arab Emirates and its forces in Aden, because United Arab Emirates doesn't want to be there a government which can actually express the term Yemen, or which can actually be in Aden. That's why United Arab Emirates, they want south of Yemen to be divided, all Yemen to be divided, so the United Arab Emirates can control Bab al-Mandab and the Bab al-Mandab Strait, and as well control Socotra Island. And
videos that went viral on social media showed that the missiles were launched from inside the Green City in Aden, which made observers accuse the SDC of seeking to push back Hadi's government to Riyadh hotels and fail the Riyadh agreement.
The Riyadh agreement implemented its objectives regarding the main interests of the Saudi and Emirati occupation authorities. Therefore, the Riyadh agreement formed this government to require it to implement the surrender of Yemeni sovereignty and not to administer any land controlled by the occupation forces.
The deputy head of SDC had preempted the arrival of the new Hadi government with a campaign to raise the flags of South Yemen in private and public facilities, including Aden International Airport, and he also warned members of the Hadi government not to talk about Yemeni unity, which confirms the continuing tension between the two parties to the conflict in southern Yemen.
There is no place for Hadi and his government in Aden. This is the message that the attack on the airport carried, meaning that Aden will continue to suffer under the rule of the militias of the UAE-backed STC. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
We're back in the eye of the storm. These were the words of Simon Stevens, the head of Britain's National Health Service, as more people are in hospital with COVID-19 now than at the peak of the first wave earlier this year. Authorities are blaming the soaring infection rates on a new, more transmissible variant of the virus, first identified in Southeast England. Dr. Katie Sanderson of the Doctors Association has warned that the strain on hospitals is only going to get worse.
The volume of sick patients coming in with coronavirus is verging on unmanageable, just in terms of ambulance capacity, A&E capacity and bed capacity. We haven't seen the patients who had coronavirus infections that they've contracted over Christmas yet, because they're probably not sick enough to come to hospital yet.
Ambulances with infected patients have been forced to wait outside hospitals as capacity is overstretched. Many more infected individuals are forced to wait at home as ambulances are unable to meet the demands on the system.
This is something that we've just never experienced before. Control room staff are having to make incredibly difficult decisions to decide who gets an ambulance and in what order, quite often with huge numbers of people waiting for ambulances and they have nobody left to send.
A growing number of National Health Service staff are also off work because they are self-isolating or have become sick with the virus. Officials are now considering tightening coronavirus restrictions, with some suggesting a total nationwide lockdown to halt the spread of the new strain. Britain has recorded more than 71,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths, although some question the accuracy of the numbers when compared to mortality rates from previous years before the pandemic. According to the Office of National Statistics, the spike in fatalities for this year remains significantly higher than the government's official record of COVID fatalities.
This year will forever be remembered for the spread of COVID-19, but another, arguably more dangerous disease has spread rapidly too, hate. More specifically, hate against Muslims. Some of the most obvious examples can be seen in France, with the French President Emmanuel Macron pushing through anti-Islam legislation to prevent so-called Islamic separatism. In a later speech, the president condemned Islam as a religion in crisis, which radicalizes citizens.
Mais je demande à tout citoyen, quelle que soit sa religion.
And there is, in this radical Islam, since this is what the issue is, let's take it on board and let's name it. There is a will, a demand, an organized method to go against the laws of the Republic and create a parallel order based on the other values. Developing a separatist society first off with the goal of ultimately taking total control, and that's what they are doing, gradually, by rejecting the freedom of expression and freedom of thought.
Tensions in France additionally increased when the state publicly began defending insulting caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. The row spilled over into violence with attacks against journalists on the 25th of September, a teacher beheaded by a lone wolf takfiri on the 16th of October, and then on the 18th, two Muslim women wearing hijab were viciously stabbed by attackers screaming, "You dirty Arabs." Outside of France, things aren't much better, with numerous incidents of far-right Quran-burning protests occurring across Scandinavia. Between November 2019 and October 2020, at least four notorious Quran desecration rallies have been allowed, despite the fact that these protests offend millions. The Norwegian Prime Minister even publicly defended Islamophobes' rights to desecrate this holy book back in August. Then there is the Islamophobic ban on the Muslim niqab, a policy enforced by many countries, despite the fact that covering your face has been proven to save lives. Austria has also jumped on the bandwagon, punishing all Muslims for the acts of a small minority of criminals, introducing new laws intended to gag Muslims' freedom of speech.
In the fight against political Islam, the ideological basis behind it, we are going to create a criminal offense called political Islam in order to be able to move against those who aren't terrorists but are preparing the ground for it.
Across the English Channel, a new conspiracy has been widely circulating, claiming that Muslims are somehow responsible for spreading the coronavirus. These ideas are not supported by any facts. However, the belief was so widespread it had to be debunked by a government fact-checker website. These are just a few examples, but studies suggest that Islamophobia is present at nearly all levels of society. Vaccines are being produced to stop COVID-19, but what is being done to defeat racism against Muslims?
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
As countries like Greece and Hungary have made it more difficult for migrants and refugees to reach the wealthier nations of the European Union, Bosnia-Herzegovina has in recent years become a central point of passage for those making their way into the European continent. The Balkan nation is not part of the European Union, but it shares more than two-thirds of its borders with Croatia, a member state. While 750 migrants were recorded passing through Bosnia in 2017, there were over 29,000 in 2019. That number decreased to 17,000 in 2020, but despite the smaller figure, the failure to accommodate them had made the crisis worse. Since Bosnia became a transit route in early 2018, thousands of migrants, mostly men, have stayed in Bihać and other nearby towns surrounded by icy hills and mountains, the European Union just a few miles away. Human rights organizations and locals in those remote areas have reported numerous instances of abuse by the Croatian police. Dozens of migrants, residents, doctors and aid workers interviewed this year by the New York Times said migrants were being deported without due process. We've prepared for you a news report written jointly by Elian Peltier and Joe Orovic. The piece is titled, Hundreds of Migrants Stranded in Freezing Weather in Bosnia. The article has been published by the New York Times. Please stay with us for more of Eliane Peltier and Joe Orovic's article. According to humanitarian groups, hundreds of migrants stranded at an abandoned camp in Bosnia and Herzegovina were spending New Year's Eve in freezing temperatures. Around 700 people on Wednesday, 30th of December, were sleeping in abandoned shipping containers and in the open space in and around the former camp of Lipa in northwestern Bosnia. The humanitarian organization said they were living in squalid conditions, lacking electricity, water supply, winter clothes and tents. The Lipa camp was abandoned recently after it was deemed unsafe by aid workers. As the migrants left, a fire destroyed most of the tents left behind. The migrants, mostly from Afghanistan, Pakistan and Bangladesh, were supposed to be relocated to an old military site in the nearby city of Bihać in coming days. But the mayor of Bihać has refused to accommodate them. The buses that came to transport the migrants to Bihać allowed some to shelter in the vehicles on Tuesday night, 29th of December, but left Lipa empty the next day. The migrants' uncertain fate was the latest example of Bosnia's struggle to provide basic assistance to those hoping to reach the European Union. Migrants have faced animosity from some officials on the Bosnian side of the border and abuses by the Croatian police on the other side of the border. On Thursday, 31st of December, the Bosnian government agreed to relocate the migrants from Lipa to Bihać, 15 miles to the north, very quickly, but didn't provide an exact date. The Interior Ministry said in a statement, "We emphasize that this is an urgent and temporary care for migrants during the winter months, until the Lipa Reception Center is built and equipped for a longer stay." The statement added that the Lipa camp would be rebuilt and water and electricity services and be ready to permanently house migrants by April. The Interior Ministry called for local authorities to facilitate the transfer and help accommodate migrants in the camp in Bihać in the meantime. It added, "Obstructing and rejecting the proposed solutions for the accommodation of migrants who are now in the open can only worsen the humanitarian situation, cause additional suffering and even human casualties." But Peter van der Aarut, the chief mission in Bosnia for the International Organization for Migration, IOM, said he was not optimistic that the decision would be enforced anytime soon due to local opposition. Van der Aarut said dozens of people are protesting with the mayors of the two towns who say they don't want to accommodate migrants, and as a result, the state, whose mandate is to relocate those migrants, bows to pressure and decides not to move. He added, "But those migrants and refugees are in dire need of life-saving humanitarian assistance. As countries like Greece and Hungary have made it more difficult for migrants and refugees to reach the wealthier nations of the European Union, Bosnia-Herzegovina has in recent years become a central point of passage for those making their way into the European continent. The Balkan nation is not part of the European Union, but it shares more than two-thirds of its borders with Croatia, which is an EU member state." While 750 migrants were recorded passing through Bosnia in 2017, there were over 29,000 in 2019. According to Peter van der Aarut, the number decreased to 17,000 in 2020, but he said despite the smaller figure, the failure to accommodate them had made the crisis worse. Since Bosnia became a transit route in early 2018, thousands of migrants, mostly men, have stayed in Bihać and other nearby towns surrounded by icy hills and mountains, the European Union just a few miles away. Human rights organizations and locals in those remote areas have reported numerous instances of abuse by the Croatian police. Dozens of migrants, residents, doctors and aid workers interviewed this year by the New York Times said migrants were being deported without due process. Increasingly, anti-immigrant attitudes in places like Bihać have festered too. Suhret Fazlić, Bihać's mayor, told the New York Times in 2018, "I don't want them here, and they don't want to be here either." Officials and some politicians of this small city near the border with Croatia gathered on Wednesday, 30th of December, in front of the barracks of the old military site, promising to block the entry of any migrants. The mayor, Suhret Fazlić, told local news outlets, "For 3 years now, we have been carrying the burden of the migrant crisis and providing accommodation for migrants," adding that he would refuse to carry out the order to relocate them. The camp in Lipa was established in April as a temporary response to the COVID-19 pandemic. But Peter van der Aarde at the International Organization for Migration, IOM, said his organization, as well as the International Committee of the Red Cross, Médecins du Monde, and the Danish Refugee Council, had made it clear to the Bosnian authorities that the camp, mostly made up of tents, was not a viable long-term solution for the migrants. The organization said in a statement recently the camp was never winterized, a process that generally includes adding thermal floor mats and insulation to shelters and distributing blankets, heating stoves and fuel. Up to 1,600 people lived in the Lipa camp without electricity or mains water on slopes exposed to strong winds, and organizations running the facility dismantled it recently after it was deemed unsafe. A prayer tent collapsed earlier this month, and Peter van der Aarde said residents were in danger by staying in the camp. He added it was more secure for them to go somewhere else in abandoned buildings in the area than staying in the big tents where the risk of collapse and fire had increased. Nearly 1,000 of the migrants headed for the vicinity of Bihać, where they have stayed in makeshift camps and abandoned buildings, but hundreds of them have remained around Lipa. Their hope is to be relocated to an old military site in Bihać, a former housing facility for migrants that local authorities closed this autumn. Earlier plans to move the migrants to another town were also dropped after the mayor and local politicians there refused to cooperate. Recently, footage shared on social media by local news outlets showed men trying to warm themselves around a fire under the remains of a tent in Lipa. Some could be seen walking on the frozen ground with sandals and without socks. Peter van der Aarde said the aid groups on Thursday, 31st of December, would provide the migrants stranded in Lipa with winter sleeping bags, with warm clothing and food, whilst the Bosnian Civil Protection Agency would distribute tents. But he said leaving the migrants in tents in icy conditions wasn't sustainable. Peter van der Aarde said, "If you don't open the camp in Bihać, you keep people in abandoned buildings uncontrolled." He added, "I don't see how this is better for the security of locals there, rather than having a centralized camp that provides the most basic services to those who need them."
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. Stay tuned.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. We've been discussing about Shahid Qasem Soleimani and the international coverage surrounding him. We've also talked about the plans of America, and that's what we're going to be talking about today as well, about what this plan actually is. I mean, what they have essentially done by assassinating this great general of ours is they have united the Muslim world, and they've kind of revived a sense of hatred for colonial America, imperialistic America in the region and in the entire world as well. Now, to start off the discussion, I'd like to go to Sayyid Mahdi. Sayyid Mahdi, here in the studio today, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ali, assalamu alaikum to you as well.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
It's a pleasure and an honor to have you both here. So, Sayyid Mahdi, I'd like to go to you first. So now America has a plan, and just curious about what Iran's plan is in this entire thing as well, but first I'd like to get your take on this whole thing.
Right, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Very interesting question. I'd like to take a different aspect on this question. For example, one of the plans, perhaps, that the United States of America had in the assassination and the martyrdom of Qasem Soleimani, for example, in their calculations, right, when normal people die, they are forgotten, you know. There's nothing that remains of them, and it just becomes something that is in the past, and eventually people let go, they forget. I mean, even in your own family, right, how many of us really know or mourn our great-great-grandfather who passed away, right, you know, how many years ago in whatever country? But the beautiful thing about martyrdom is that the martyr is never forgotten. And this was something that they did not calculate, and they did not learn from history, and they did not learn from the concept of a martyrdom. The martyr is never forgotten.
Absolutely. There's a popular quote as well, that when the tyrant dies, his rule ends, and
well,
when the martyr
actually
dies.
That was going to be a part of my point.
I'm so sorry.
It's
I stole
okay,
it
no
from
problem.
You.
So the enemy, contrary to their calculations, they end up making Qasem Soleimani a living legend.
SubhanAllah.
Okay?
Right.
This is one of their greatest miscalculations. They thought that he would be forgotten, that his work would cease. But right at the martyrdom of Qasem Soleimani, we find the leader of the Islamic Ummah who says that, no, this path of resistance, this fight of resistance will never stop. It will continue, but rather it will continue with much more determination, and it will continue with much more strength. It really reminds me of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, where the tyrants of his time, the Yazids and the Shimmers, they killed him, they assassinated him, and they tried to erase his name from the pages of history. Mm. But his name and his mission remains living forever. And so in the same sense, I believe that the name and the mission of Qasem Soleimani will also remain forever. And I end with the quote that you said, that the tyrant dies and his rule ends, the martyr dies and his rule begins.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Sheikh Ali, can we take a... actually, before this, we started this show today, we were discussing behind the scenes about America's plan and their plot, especially with the downing of the airliner and stuff, and we can see that some of the morale has come down. And through the assassination, what was their aim? And now that they have assassinated Sheikh Qasem Soleimani and turned him into a living legend, as Sayyid Mahdi has said, what is our plan? What's the plan of the resistance forces? What's the plan of Iran?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, he plans, he has his own game plan, and then the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they have their own plan. At the moment, we see that America has gone ahead with the scheme and the plan it had put together, the plot it had put together against the resistance movement in the region and throughout the world. Now, you know, what was behind the scenes? You know, one can speculate. Of course, they're not going to come out clean, as the enemy never, you know, puts it out in public. But what was happening was that they decided that this was the right time to take the turmoil in the West Asian region that America has predominantly and primarily planted to a next level.
Yeah.
And they were like, how do we take it to the next level? This is where they decide that, okay, by taking out a personality which is at this high level, they would be able to create that confusion and you know, anger and outrage in the region, where they were hoping and expecting and anticipating that Iran would, you know, immediately come to the scenes and react.
Right.
Right. And their calculation was that the reaction that Iran gives, we're going to play off of that. You know how Trump said before he became the president, back in Obama's time, that, you know, our president is going to start a war against
right.
Iran so he gets reelected?
Yeah. This is in 2011.
Right. And now Trump is doing exactly the same thing.
Exactly.
So it's a very old tactic. Now, we all know that America feeds off of wars, right? They want a full-scale war. This
what?
Is just America's economy. What happens is...
Sorry, I know that's not our subject, but I'm just very curious. Like, what do we mean by it fuels...
What happens is America needs a war. Why, right? Every decade or so, America needs a new war. In order for you to be able to understand it, let me try to water it down. So the economy of America, if you look at its national debt,
right,
what does America have? It's under debt. It's probably the most indebted country in the world.
Yeah, trillions.
Right? Now, how do they keep running their economy then? Well, the answer is they feed off of the resources of other nations. Now, how do you get a hold of the resources of other nations? By going, occupying them, by attacking them, by stealing their natural resources. For instance, easiest example would be the oil.
Right.
You get your hands onto oil and you sell that oil. You make money off of it. Now, America has been stealing oil from this region for decades now.
Right.
Okay.
It wanted more control over this oil so it can sell it and make money off of it. To do what? To run its own economy and to enhance its hegemony in the region and, you know, throughout the world.
What do they need that for? I mean, they print money out of nothing.
Well, that's true. You can say that, but it's not that unchecked either,
mm-hmm.
right? At the end of the day, there are... you know, there are processes and controls that they have to somehow abide by. While I agree with you at large that, yes, America is that type of a tyrant that looks you right in your face and tells you, you know, I am going to go ahead what I feel like doing, and you have no right to even question me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do even in their political maneuvers, right?
Right.
United Nations can't even question America and its policies.
Yeah, NATO can't
right?
even question
NATO can't, and nobody can, right? And this is where, you know, the Islamic Revolution comes into play. The Islamic Revolution of Iran, it gave this courage to the world that we don't need to give in to America's pressures. We have questions. We have genuine questions about why America is doing this, why America is doing that. What gives the license to America to go and bomb other countries? What gives the license to America to, nuke other countries, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Japan. Even today, people are born, they're crippled. Why? So the Islamic Revolution, it gave that courage to the nations around the globe, and this is why they hate Islamic Revolution, right, and this, the system of Wilayat al-Faqih in Iran, because it does not give in to America's pressures. Now, that was a tangent, right?
Okay.
America needed a war, and they really thought they were having their hopes high that, okay, this is the time that Iran is going to respond in a manner that is going to outburst into a war, a World War III. Now, Iran, on the other hand, of course, it cannot let go any injustice and any act of oppression and any act of terror unchecked. It had to respond at the end of the day, right? So this is where, Iran had to play its own policy where they don't completely play into the hands of America by letting them wage a war and nuke Iran, for instance, and at the same time respond to this act of terrorism.
It's quite complex.
Right? Okay. Act of state terrorism.
Okay.
Now, what did they do? Iran played very wise.
Right.
Iran broke that entire scenario of U.S. being this superpower that no one can go and touch its, interests in the region and its military bases, and everybody has to be careful of not trampling over American interests in the region. Iran instead broke that by attacking one of their most equipped military bases.
Right? But isn't that retaliation what America wanted to happen?
Well, this is what I'm saying, that this is not to a scale where America had the license to just come and attack this country.
Right.
Right? Now, this is how you can understand it better.
Okay.
Listen, America thought that once we're going to take out a general, right, a person who is that high up in the food chain in the system of Wilayat al-Faqih, the Iranians are going to be furious, but the rest of the world is going to be indifferent. This miscalculation that they did, this actually took them by surprise. The world reacted. Iraq reacted.
Right.
Right? Iran had to react, of course. Iraq reacted. Their government reacted. Iraqi parliament, they passed a bill just after the assassination and martyrdom of Shahid Qasem Soleimani. They passed a bill where they said that American troops, every single one of them, need to and must leave the country, Iraq.
Dear listeners, that's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed and benefited from the show. If you do have any questions or queries, or if you want to see any of our other content, you can visit pasttoday.com. From myself, from Sayyid Mehdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please, don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.